It's time for another episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur.
I go back again. What are the opportunities? Those that think as the government puts more money into the system, they're printing money.
Right.
And at different times, you could argue that's not a good thing. But right now, we seem to have to do that.
Yeah.
If that's going to happen, we're probably going to face inflation. I don't want to give people financial advice. It's not my role. But if we face inflation, what will your strategy be? What will you do in the face of inflation?
Right.
So we're looking at all the different things that could come down the pike and preparing for them as best we can.
Yeah. No, the economic issues are going to be much bigger than the healthcare issues. The healthcare issue is going to be resolved once we come up with a vaccine and we're all comfortable enough to know we're protected.
Yeah. We'll come out of it.
Until the next one.
Without question. Yes.
Yeah.
Now, what do we do to prepare for that?
Right. And there'll be some industries that get just hammered and they're not capable. They're not working with you, for example, and they're not capable of making it to the next level and they had to lay everybody off and who knows. And then there'll be other ones that survive and thrive. And you know, it's going to be a new normal, I think.
Always.
Yeah.
And as I say, it's no different than any other time of change. It's just accelerated.
Right. Right.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
My name is Arnie Rinsler. My company is AWR Business Concepts. And for 25 plus years, I have working in what I call myself a business consultant. But what I really label myself as is a catalyst. A catalyst is something that when you add it to something, it changes that. I'm not changed, but what I'm added to changes. And for the next 13 years, I grew that. Retail stores, I grew up to 8 stores. And then in 1993, I sold my company to a large national chain. And then began looking around for what was I going to do next. I looked around and looked for a job for a very short time, but then realized that that's not what I wanted to do. And I started doing consulting work to owners. And that's remained what I've done since 1993.
Okay.
I worked with owners. The type of business doesn't matter. I've worked with almost every different kind of business there is, including medical, including services and manufacturing. Very little retailing, although that was my background. Mostly, it's just businesses that want to grow. And that's what I've done and how I've created a consulting practice.
Right. So you don't work inside. You're not on payroll. You're an outside consultant. You're brought in as an expert to work with various businesses. And Arnie, are there any more industries that you work with more than not others in terms of your client base?
No, actually, if I take a spread, it really is across the board.
Okay.
From service, manufacturing to retailing and everything in between.
Okay. All right.
The only common element.
Right. Your client is an owner. Sure. Business owners is who you're working with. You're not working with an executive of a large publicly traded corporation or something like that.
I have been hired as a coach.
Okay.
Every so often, a contact will make it happen. And as a matter of fact, my latest client is actually, it's not the first one I've worked with, is a nonprofit religious organization. Strangely enough, that is also... they need the same thing.
Right.
It's identifying a client, who is the client, although we speak of it differently in different venues. What does the client want? How do I reach that client? And how do I service that client?
Right. Right. Sure. That all makes sense. So then this is a good episode for us to be talking about, because we are, and you were saying this a little bit off mic, we're living in some very interesting times. And as a result of the Paul crisis, I think it's really accelerating the use of technology, really, in remote work, in the remote working world, I guess, right?
Well, let's look at it, stepping back a little bit further.
Sure.
If you look at every crisis we've been through, it has accelerated change. In this particular crisis, the change that was happening, which is technology and working remotely and things like that,
right,
was happening naturally. What this is doing is accelerating that change.
Got it.
And as in any change, there's opportunity for those that will shed what we look at or what we do and be open to the next thing we need to be doing.
Right.
And as you stated, at this time, it's technology and the communicating remotely.
Right.
And so that the barriers of physicality are not necessary.
Right. And you're right. There are certain kinds of people, mostly the successful people, ones that you know, that look at challenges as opportunities, right? They don't look at challenges like, oh, you know, what are we going to do now? And there's a little bit element of panic to what's going on right now, but I think you're right. There's a certain kind of person, and I know my list and you know your list, who you can pinpoint right away and say, you know what? This guy's going to not only get through it, but he's going to have an opportunity. I have a friend of mine who's got a manufacturing plant in Newark. I'm actually talking to him tonight at 8:00. And they make their hat manufacturing, you know, like baseball hats, and they make some bags for the military. And maybe they still have some military contracts. Nobody's buying baseball hats from them. So what he did was, he wanted to keep his employees safe. So he split the company in two parts, and now they got separate shifts, so nobody's near each other and when they're in the factory. And he retooled the whole factory to make face shields, because they can't make masks, and gowns for the hospitals. And he's been, a lot of it's donating or doing it at cost immediately. And he's been doing a lot of this stuff now. He's in Newark, and obviously the town's supporting him. And he, you know, figured a way to stay relevant and to keep his factory open and keep his workers getting paid and keep money coming in the door. And it's definitely the outside of the box thinkers. Do you have some other examples of clients you're working with?
Oh, absolutely.
Good.
That's what I'm doing.
Right.
Is finding opportunity.
Right.
Now, again, restaurants are making food for hospitals.
Right.
Because the hospital facility can't possibly handle what they're doing and how they're doing it.
Right.
And so the restaurants that are looking to do that. Restaurants that are donating food and selling food because people want to come up and pay for it.
Right.
To first responders.
Yeah.
And so there's, if one looks, there is opportunity. Now,
yeah.
I also have some clients that are deemed businesses that are necessary, and they're in construction worlds.
Right, they can stay open.
It goes on, and they keep doing that.
Right.
So there is lots of opportunity. I mean, just in my personal life, I want to get food that I want to pick up and not go to the grocery store, and I'm finding some companies are stepping up and doing it well, and other companies are not doing it well.
Right.
And those companies will benefit when this is over, because
yep,
they're learning new techniques.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I have some businesses that are booming. I have a woman who's got a produce business, so she delivers fresh boxes to people's houses, and she can't keep up with the demand because obviously everybody
absolutely
wants stuff delivered, and it helps the farmers because a lot of the farmers aren't delivering now to restaurants and to places that they used to deliver. And then I have some – I mean, look at me. I'm a business lawyer. So
right,
the business will call their consultant, their expert, like you. How do we deal with this? They're not calling me. And I also mentioned to you that I had a seminar before this about virtual witnessing and notarization of estate documents, which right now under law, New Jersey is a little weak in that area. It's problematic. So it's very hard,
yes,
for me specifically to stay in business right now. And I'm just staying relevant and, doing updates online and going to virtual meetings. And, you know, I'm doing a few wills here and there, but getting them signed is definitely a challenge. So you're right. It depends on the industry. So have you found a lot of your clients are coming to you and saying, hey, Arnie, you know, what do we do? Or you think some of them are coming up with them on their own? Does it What have you seen?
Most of the time, I'm reaching out. And when I when this began 3 or 4 weeks ago, I began offering to meet with them, non-paid, to begin introducing them to Zoom.
Right,
and
sure.
The Zoom platform. Yeah. And I've been amazed how many don't know the platform. There are other platforms, other good ones, but Zoom seems to be taking off.
Yeah, Zoom seems to be the more well-known one. The schools are using it, both at the college level, at the high school, and the middle school level. I know there was some security issues a week or two ago, but it looks like they've corrected those things.
They dealt with quickly, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, yes, that it began for me with me reaching out to clients and saying, let's meet.
Yeah.
Let's speak. And a couple of clients says, no, I'm just busy trying to keep my head above water. We don't have time to do this. And I don't push. But
right.
then when I get together with somebody and begin speaking, I get the response, this was a fabulous call.
Well, right. Well, isn't they're barely keeping their head above water. That's the purpose of your call. That's why they should be talking to you. Right.
And that's accurate.
Yeah.
And that becomes the point. So yes, you're accurate. Most of it is me proactively reaching out to my client.
Yeah. I think the IT guys, they're real busy. Because just like you said, nobody knows how to get connected.
Yes,
they got problems. Those guys are staying in business. But
in fact, many of them are becoming overwhelmed. I have an IT client, and that particular one, their greatest challenge is being overwhelmed.
Right.
The other challenge, and this was not a client. This is something that came up yesterday because it had to do yesterday was Sunday, but I was speaking to somebody that works for a public company. And the public company's business isn't bad.
Right.
That actually they're doing some of the stuff they have to do, but they're anticipating bad.
Right.
And they're beginning to shed staff.
Yeah.
Which is exactly the wrong thing to do because they don't need to shed staff. And so the particular person I was speaking with, who's a senior officer of the company, he's very upset that the management of where he is responding to general conditions of the country, not their business.
Right.
And it will hurt them in the long run because they're going to have to try to hire back.
Yeah.
And there's so many things to do before you shed staff. And that's a concern.
Yeah. And I don't know what people's outlook are. I think at the beginning, they're like, oh my God, we're going to be in here all summer. I don't think that's the case. I think maybe coming into May, you're going to see things start to loosen up a little bit, and then getting into June, maybe things will be lifted. I don't know if people are just going to be going to sporting events. If Trump had it his way, we would all go to a football stadium and all pack in together and yay, have a big rally. And then we'll all get sick and have a relapse.
I don't think that's going to happen because then we'll begin shedding the virus again.
Yeah, we're going to relapse.
Sharing it.
Exactly.
But it will be stop and start. We'll open some things up, see how it works. We'll open some more, see how it works. And we don't know how that's going to play out.
Right.
But the point being is I go back again. What are the opportunities? Those that think as the government puts more money into the system, they're printing money.
Right.
And at different times, you could argue that's not a good thing. But right now, we seem to have to do that.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to happen. Probably going to face inflation. I don't want to give people financial advice. It's not my role. But if we face inflation, what will your strategy be? What will you do in the face of inflation?
Right.
So we're looking at all the different things that could come down the pike and preparing for them as best we can.
Yeah. No, the economic issues are going to be much bigger than the healthcare issues. The healthcare issue is going to be resolved once we come up with a vaccine and we're all comfortable enough to know we're protected.
Yeah, we'll come out of it.
Until the next one.
Without question, yes.
Yeah.
Now, what do we do to prepare for that?
Right. And there'll be some industries that get just hammered and they're not capable. They're not working with you, for example, and they're not capable of making it to the next level and they had to lay everybody off and who knows. And then there'll be other ones that survive and thrive and, it's going to be a new normal, I think.
Always.
Yeah.
And as I say, it's no different than any other time of change. It's just accelerated.
Right. Right. Okay. So originally the goal of this podcast to bring you on was to talk about the things that you do for business owners and advice for business owners and stuff. I mean, maybe the advice is a little bit different, but I don't know that really changes what we're talking about, right? It's just we're in a different environment. We have different things going on now, but I think the stuff's the same, right?
It is the same. And I wanted to just step back for the moment.
Sure. Great.
When I work with a client, my first engagement will almost always be a planning process.
Okay.
And in the planning process, I look at four basic platforms: people, strategy, execution, and cash. And that we lay this out, and we lay out what would be a long term, what would be a midterm. Midterm in today's world is no more than 3 years.
Okay.
As we live now. And then we look at 1 year and then 90 days. And so we're constantly looking at always the next 90 days in that structure of people, strategy, execution, and cash. And it's one of the things that I just do normally all the time is challenge a company as to what are they doing vis-a-vis their people.
Right.
Who are their people? How are they identifying what I call A's? How are they identifying B's? What are they doing to move the B's to A's? What are they doing to actually shed the C's, which will harm a company?
Right.
And so I get involved in that kind of an issue, how to do it. Not only how to identify, but how to then seek out and find A's.
Yeah, that seems even more relevant.
A's.
It's even Absolutely. More relevant now, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's certainly more relevant now. And
right.
now, again, these are one of those times where there are people available. We always come out of, in the midst of every recession, the company that's hiring will do very well because that's where the good people are available.
Right.
Once we're full employment, who's available? Who's
yeah.
available are people that are just got fired.
Right.
And that aren't doing well where they are.
Yeah, before this, wasn't it more of a job seekers market, meaning
before this, the biggest problem that my clients had were to
compete for the good people.
For the good people,
right?
And that was limiting businesses that needed technical skilled people,
right?
And so suddenly we're inundated with technically skilled people. And those people that will find a way to seek, upgrade their staffs, and hire, they will do the best coming out of it.
Right.
So we're always faced with this paradox. We want to keep the best people, but we want to upgrade our staff, which means we may not keep people that we wouldn't keep in different times.
Right. Well, that's what's going to keep us in a recession for a little while, won't it? Because if there's companies that are coming back on their feet, they laid off 80, 100 people, several hundred people. They're not hiring them all back from day one, right? So they're starting to bring people. I mean, if they're furloughed, I guess that's different, right? Because furloughed is it's designed to be a temporary layoff, right?
Well, I need to say something else in terms of the recession
sure.
discussion. That when I meet a client and you want to do, sure, I'd love to do more business, or what's the problem of the recession or whatever. I have a common question that I ask somebody, and most of my work is in the New York metro area. And most of my work is with companies under $20 million, often under $10 million. And if I'm saying to a company, in the world that you're in, being here in the New York metro area,
right.
or nationally, if you can do your job digitally, what's your market share? And usually, it's a dumb question, what's your market share?
Right.
Because the market share is too small to measure.
Right. For so small companies,
right.
measure, it's irrelevant.
What's your market share of the attorney work that you're able to do, the legal work you're able to do? You'd look at me that was a silly question.
Right, can't even measure it. So small.
It's too small to measure.
Right.
So the idea that some greater force is limiting your business is foolish.
Right.
What's limiting your business is what you are doing. That's what's limiting your business. The clients are unlimited, even in the worst of times. The clients are unlimited.
Right.
Now, how do we reach them? What do we do? What do we offer? Those are all strategy discussions.
Right. No, but it's a consciousness, right? It's them recognizing from you that
yes.
there are no limits in their little microcosm.
Right.
There's plenty of business to go around. You
Absolutely.
Just don't participate in the recession, right?
That's exactly right. Don't participate in the recession.
Yeah.
I couldn't have said it any better. That's absolutely
There was a
accurate.
Sales guy I heard years ago, and he said something like, I know a lot of people have said, I forget where, it was something in the insurance business, because that's where my dad was, and that's where I went to a lot of sales meetings. So the gentleman was talking, and it was something like that. It was tough times, and you know, I know everybody's facing difficult times, but I've just chosen not to participate in the recession, and I find people to do business with, and you know, a lot of it's mindset. Yeah, a lot of it's your
do
mindset.
Do not participate in the recession. Now, I do understand in these times, I go back to the metaphor, if I'm a massage therapist, what do?
Right.
I have to touch my client. And so but those are not unique examples. And restaurants, they have to switch and change.
Right. Look, massage therapists could do things online and give their clients exercises to be relaxed and
think
breathing. I mean, they can't touch them physically, but they could... You know, you have couples, maybe you teach one couple how to do a massage and the other one, you know, for therapy. I mean, there's different ways to look. The gyms did it, right? They jumped online and said, oh, we'll do classes online.
Absolutely.
You know,
and that becomes the point. And then what we find is, wow, that was a better way to do it.
Right.
You know, I'm not going back to another way.
Right.
And that's where the change happens.
Right. Look, I have a guy who's got a the academy for like a martial arts studio.
Yes.
Well, after this, he doesn't necessarily have to just do local things. He could find young kids, because it's all kids. He could find parents that are looking for their kids for an outlet, and he's become well known, and they could do things online with him from Alaska or whatever, now that the world's a different place.
One of the things that this is happening is education.
Yeah.
That we're going to discover how much time we are wasting by having people have to travel to be somewhere to be educated.
Right. Correct.
And I have another, this isn't a client, it's a relative, and he's in headquartered in the southwestern part of the United States. And his business was struggling. It was a career, you know, post high school kind of business. And the culture has kind of turned against those because the government has identified that there was a lot of fraud and abuse in those businesses. And so they've become much tougher. And some of the biggest people in them over the last 2 to 3 years have gone out of business. And so that I was talking to him last week, and I said, how are you doing?
Right.
He says, well, we went from 20% online to 100% online.
Yeah.
And he said, we did it in 2 weeks, and so we're carrying on. I said, wonderful. Now, what that's going to allow that business to do is totally restructure itself, cut its costs dramatically, and become a better product at a lesser price as we come out of this.
Right.
And so those are examples of when you ask me specifics, every business has its own, as in every human,
right,
has its own profile. And it's identifying the profile of the business and what can you do.
Sure.
And, you know, whoever said necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah, probably the smartest man ever to live on the planet Earth.
Well, yeah. And so that the point being is, we're in necessity now.
Right.
And if somebody wants to survive, there's lots of opportunities.
Sure. Well, online learning is going to be, it's going to raise the question as to why do I send my kid to a university and live there and pay for him to be there and party and struggle and all, when he could have get the same degree from the same university, but do it remotely, probably for half the price and maybe even work at the same time and get skills and things like that. I think it's going to change that stuff.
Now, this is going to carry through down through the high school and junior high.
There's going to be no more snow days, Arnie, at least not in our area.
There should never be a snow day.
You can do online learning for the day. There won't be.
This is what is starting that we're creating now, online learning.
Right.
There will never – I see in New Jersey, we will never see a snow day.
Right.
And that would be a major change. I have another client who's got high schools.
Right.
Okay. And he was creating something over the last 3 years where it was a combination when their child could not fit into the high school.
Right.
For whatever reason. The child was an athlete or an entertainer and is traveling, is doing things. So this also, it's to the disabled community. That this particular person was creating hybrid, where we could create something that there was some place that they could go to, and there would be teachers, and that there would be individual curriculums for each child and each teacher may have 10 or 15 students
right.
that they were monitoring. And there'd be maybe six or eight in a location. And the business was doing very well, and now it's exploding.
Right.
Because they were prepared for this.
Sure.
And it's just providing opportunity. And I've always felt, gee, high school should move more toward that. And now I think they will be.
Yeah.
The progressive schools will be.
Yeah, definitely. Well, right now, the only individual education plans, the IEPs, are for the kids that are challenged. You know, and you're going to find that some kids can go at a much faster pace with certain topics and other ones can't. And, you know, teaching to the middle, I guess that's how they do it. When you go into a class and you sit with the teacher, and the teacher's got 40 kids in class, and a lot of my kids, so I have one in middle school and college. So the college one, he's got a couple of things online, but for the most part, the professors are like, listen, I'm going to put this online. You do it. Get it back to me. I want you to learn the material and we'll deal with it at the end. The other ones are doing some online, but some of the teachers don't want to do online. So they post the stuff. They said, submit it. I want to see that you know it. And you can move on to the next thing. But I think you're right. It's going to be much more of an individual curriculum, and it's going to change the way we do it.
The other thing that I suspect is going to happen is teachers are like anybody else. They've got skills.
Right.
They do some things better than other things. So up until now, what we've been doing is we put a teacher in the classroom, and
that's all
that
I knew.
Teacher was both a planner and a coach and whatever. Now we can specialize teachers.
Right.
The best presenters will create content.
Yeah.
They will present. They will do YouTube videos.
Yeah.
They will lecture. They will do things. And then other teachers will monitor and will coach and see where kids are going. Just the opportunities are unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, I hope the public education system kind of sees this, because I think that a lot of the teachers obviously technologically challenged, and a lot of the school systems don't have, and they jumped to get, you know, their systems up and running, and they're doing that now, but a lot of the teachers still aren't that technologically savvy. And I think I need
to share something else with you that happened to me 3 minutes before we got on the call today. My 82-year-old sister said, I'm learning Zoom. And this is not a technical person. She's learning Zoom.
Right. It's not that difficult.
And so the last thing I said, I says, whenever you're ready for a Zoom meeting, let me know.
Right.
She lives in another state. We don't see each other very often. But now we will be able to communicate.
Yeah. No, my family's having Zoom meetings. I got Long Island, Florida, all
absolutely.
Parts of the country. We're having Zoom meetings once a week, and everybody's getting on.
We're moving people quickly.
Right.
To become technically proficient
right.
in things that they never were before or wouldn't have challenged themselves to be doing it. And that we're finding that's happening everywhere.
Yeah.
And I'd like to focus on it. It's exciting.
Sure.
It's exciting to watch people grow.
Yeah. Well, I always felt that way about education. I think that we teach our children like it's still 1945, and, you know, with these, and hopefully this will change some of that. You know, I'm not happy that it happened, and people are getting sick and dying and terrible things like that. And a lot of it's.
But let me go forward, because it may be by the time that this does air, some of the questions about being separated and sheltered in place may have gone by the wayside. So let me go back to what I said earlier, that many of the things that we're talking about now are exaggerated.
Right.
But what I want to do all the time is challenge my client or potential client. And frequently I meet with people, as you and I met, and everybody doesn't become my client because it's not appropriate. But my mission, my goal is to ask challenging questions to those people that I sit with, that I speak to.
Sure.
And so that what I normally want to do is meet with people and awaken in them. And the more that I awaken in them, questions that they haven't asked themselves, haven't challenged themselves with. And obviously my goal is occasionally to make clients, but my greater goal is to help people see opportunity.
Right.
And if they become my clients, then they'll get a greater sense of that. If they don't, not a problem. And if I can help, then that's great.
Right. That's your unique value proposition, you know?
That is my value. That's it. That is my value proposition.
Absolutely. Not everybody's going to see that, but like you said, market share is not the issue. There's plenty of people to do business with, right? Never had short of those.
And as I say, my key goal is to be out of the house so my wife doesn't yell at me all the time.
Right.
And so I just want to keep moving and be out and speak to people.
Yeah.
And the other side of it is I tend to be fun to sit and talk to.
You are fun to sit and talk to. You have a lot of insight, a lot of experience, a lot of knowledge and things to say.
I don't take myself that seriously. And when I can ask somebody a silly question, I love it when somebody says to me, or I say to somebody, do you want to grow your business? And in all the history I've done this with the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that have asked the question, I've never heard anybody say, no, I don't want to grow my business.
Well, of course not.
They may not want more revenue. They want more profit or whatever. And I always say, terrific. When would you like to start? You know, they say, what are we going to do?
Right.
And so I'll begin to lay out things that they could do. And then what people have to realize, I know this sounds silly, but to be different, you must change.
Right.
If you want to lose weight, you must eat differently. You must exercise differently. In order to have a better relationship with a child or a spouse or a colleague, you must do something different.
Right.
And when you're locked in to what you're doing and will not change, the future will not be different.
No, you can't. Right. You can't continue to do what you're doing and expect a different result.
Yes.
That's not possible.
Now, we all know that intellectually, but I'd like to have a dollar for every client that's hired
me.
And we've worked together for a while, and they'll say, well, my business isn't getting better. And I would say, because you ain't doing anything different.
Right. Of course. You've reached the
pinnacle. How's that working out for you?
Yeah.
And so frequently I will lose clients because when somebody realizes, oh, I really have to be different to do better. And so my greatest way to lose a client is, I love the term fat, dumb, and happy. And if a client is making enough money and life is good, and I'm saying, do you want to grow? Absolutely, I want to grow my business.
But they don't really want to. Right.
And they're really not willing to change.
Right. No question about it.
So that is the challenge.
Right.
One must be willing to change.
It sounds funny, but isn't it, they say that's the definition of stupidity?
Doing
the same thing and definitely insanity, right? Doing the same thing and expecting a different result.
Doing the same thing and expecting a different result.
But you're right. There are people that are at a stage in their career or their life where they've made enough money to pay their bills and they have money put away and they're not driven by, you know, they're just at a point in their career where they're not driven to continue to grow. Now, of course, they may run into challenges later on where it doesn't maintain at the level that it's at. But, you know, for some people, I guess that's okay. They're certainly not your prospects.
Now you get into another major element of my practice.
Okay. See, it's like you could have paid me off for this interview.
No, I mean, and again, that it's each person always has to ask themselves, where are you going and why are you going? Why are you going there? One of my favorite people to watch on YouTube is Simon Sinek. He's the author of Why. Why are we doing this?
Uh-huh.
And for those that have never watched him, I recommend highly his videos. It really is the why. Why are we doing this? And what I often, and you may relate to this, Mitchell, I'm not sure, but the goal for most people, and I can go back and scholastically or talk about different psychologists or whatever they've written about this, is fulfillment. And fulfillment for most people is mastery, becoming an expert at what you do. And so that it's the challenge to do that. Most of us, whether we see it or not, once our basic needs are met, we're not working for money.
Right.
We're working for something else. And I love to listen to somebody like Elon Musk of Tesla and SpaceX. He truly is moving the culture to a sustainable form of energy.
Right.
And it underlies everything he does, which is why I find his company fascinating to watch.
Yeah, both, no, you're
all three of his companies.
You're a Tesla aficionado.
In the boring company, digging tunnels.
Right.
And so everything he does is based on that principle. How do I move society to a sustainable form of energy?
Right.
Which is great. And so that each of us needs to find, once we get past, gee, I'm good at my job, I can make a good living, I can grow my company, most of us are working for something else. Now let's identify what that is. And so sometimes that is what I'm helping somebody to do, is to provide the motivation to make the change. I mean, going back to the weight loss, if somebody's in their 50s and very much out of shape, and they've got kids that they'd love to see married and grandchildren, but they're not living a life that's going to take them much beyond early 70s.
Right.
So you want to put them in touch with why they want to be healthy, why they want to go somewhere. And as they say, a personal trainer, if they're successful, learns to do this. A business consultant, if they're successful, learns to do this.
Right.
Is to help somebody identify their greater goal of what they want to do.
Right. Well, you know, and I'm look, neither of us are psychologists, but I think from all the stuff that I read and listen to and follow, when you really get down to the basics of it, it's usually a level of comfort, confidence, and self-worth. And
you bet.
The people that really achieve things in life feel that they're comfortable in their own skin and they're worthy to do it and they're capable of doing it. And I think you're right. Once somebody becomes successful and they're comfortable, meaning that they feel I've succeeded and I can do other things, they and some a lot of it's psychological, but yeah, they don't think that they're worthy, and a lot of people won't get out of their own skin. They won't try new things. They won't give that speech or say this thing because they feel maybe it's a little bit of shame. I don't know, but it's definitely a level of discomfort or insecurity. And I think yep. that a lot of these people who reach the level of, you know, like take a guy like Elon Musk. Obviously, he's a brilliant guy. He's a thinker and he's always thinking outside the box. But he is not insecure in any regard whatsoever.
Nope.
He'll try everything. He doesn't care that, you know, something bombs because he'll try something else. And there's other people that are too uncomfortable and too insecure to even try that because it might fail.
Yep.
Obviously, that's a much larger portion of the population.
And fear of failure becomes the
paralyzing.
Detriment
yeah.
to success.
It's paralyzing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And yep. look, I meet people all the time. They go, oh, you know, this person's putting this person down. They're not nice. They're this, they're that. They don't even – a lot of it comes from insecurity and, in you know, from their own – it's not because they're malicious people where they walk around. They go, I'm going to put that person down and make them feel bad. They do it because they're insecure. They're putting you down to raise in their mind, raise themselves up. Doesn't do that.
Yeah.
But
which is a false, which doesn't work.
Right. You know? It doesn't work. It right. doesn't work. A lot of it's consciousness. But I think a lot of it working with a guy like you. Yeah. But yes. you bring that level of consciousness that says, hey, you can't do this the same way that you're doing it because you're at the end of the road here. It's not going to go anywhere else. And that's okay. Right. They don't have to work with me. They don't have to work with you. But if they do want it, then they got to come across to the other side of the fence, so to speak.
Yeah. What I tend to do is I rarely tell anybody what to do, but I ask a lot of questions.
Right.
And my favorite question is, how's that behavior working for you? Is it getting you what you want?
Right.
And if the answer is no, oh, what can we do? What else can we do? What right. can we look at?
Right.
And so.
You're a big Socrates fan, huh? Big Socratic method fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the best way to do it.
Of course. You let them explore it and come to that conclusion. You don't need to tell them. What do you need to force yeah. feed somebody and tell them, well, this is how you should do it? They're not going to listen to you anyway. They got to come to that conclusion on their own.
Yeah. See, you are a knowledge consultant.
Right.
Which means you're a subject matter expert. I come to you because I need to obey the law. I need to know the law, and I don't know it, and you're going to help me obey the law. I'm not a knowledge consultant. I'm very fortunate to realize that I'm not that smart. but what I try to be good at is asking questions.
Right.
And that's the skill set.
Yeah, well, look, a lot of the business planning I do is not necessarily – it's not – I mean, look, the drafting of a document is knowledge-based in terms of the law, but its actual content, like your operating agreement, can say whatever you want. You got to tell me, well, what who runs this business? How does it operate? Who makes the decisions? Why? What happens if you're having a fight about it? And I – you know – they kind of have to guide me with the question, but they don't even know the questions to ask half the time.
Yes, yes.
You know?
And that really is it. You're often helping them ask the questions. Right. What are the questions they
right before it's a problem? Because if you're asking it then, yes. It's too late.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yeah, and that's we're in the same business, but you're smarter than me.
We're the same different sides of the same coin, I think.
You've got more skill sets than I do. More knowledge.
I doubt that. So let's talk about the things like some recommendations, some advice, some things that people, small business owners should do kind of as they're coming out of this whole thing. Because like you see when I said, we're hoping by the time this episode comes out that things will be, it's not going to go away, but it'll be a little bit looser. People will be out. They'll be going to work. They'll be maybe not congregating in large groups, but they'll be seeing clients. So what kind of advice do you have for small business owners?
Well, the advice is going to be generic, but I was on a call with somebody this past week, and I just started asking some of these questions, and she absolutely just said, wow, I never thought of this.
Okay, good. We want wows here.
I know. It's who's your client, okay?
Right.
What is it your client wants? So it's first identifying what your product or service is. Who is the client that needs that product or service? How can you best approach that product or service as in marketing? And then as you identify through marketing somebody to self-identify that they really are open to listening to your product or service, what's your process? I know that's so generic.
No, it's
but
good.
Just as you go to the specifics of each of those steps. And the first is, what is it you're selling? Why does somebody do business with you? What's your product or service?
Right.
And then you move down. Who wants it?
Right.
Who's the client for it? How do you market to them? and many of these things, I need to send somebody to another professional.
Right.
I mean, I learned a long time ago, social media is moving so fast and in so many different directions.
Oh my goodness.
That I just
so fast. Yeah.
So I need to have consultants in those areas to help people.
And
identify.
This whole crisis has sped it up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that becomes the point. But the questions are the same.
Right.
And this particular person that I was speaking to was beginning a new thing. And I was just asking those basic questions. Who is your client? What is your product or service? Because she was struggling to identify that to me.
Right.
What exactly she was selling, because she knew so much, but she couldn't boil it down
right.
to communicate.
Yeah.
So once we got that, who wants it?
Right. And I think some of that may be shifting now, but it's still the same questions, right?
Oh, same question.
Yeah.
Who wants it? That's what I'm saying is that there's nothing new under the sun.
Right.
There is, but it really isn't.
No, it's a change of something else. You know, it's not, there's very little innovation in terms of completely new.
Those things.
Yeah. And I think we talked about when we had breakfast together was about, you know, as a business owner, you have to, and sometimes you got to continue to reinvent this, I guess, what is your unique value proposition, unique selling proposition at that particular time, given whatever, because if it's not, you and I could go down the street and open up the same store that they have and drive them out of business.
Right.
You know, so.
And that becomes the point, is that when I say strategy, a strategy can never be, I'm going to be the cheapest price.
Right. Because you'll lose that fight eventually.
You can't win that.
Right.
You can't win that battle unless you're Walmart. They win that battle.
Yeah, but ironically, though, Arnie, they really don't win that battle because they strong arm the people that they do business with. So very often, in order to price compete and whatever, they tell their vendors, well, this is the deal. You got to do it at this price and whatever. It's not fair dealing. They're not just lowering the price, you know?
Except what happens is the market adapts to them.
Right. Well, they have a lot of market control.
Well, but what happens, listen, a small manufacturer cannot deal with Walmart. They'll
right.
kill them.
I know. I've had clients do it, and they just get
exactly
pounded into the ground.
That's exactly right. And so that I learned that a long time ago when I was working for Macy's, that I would learn that we had to take care of our vendors.
Yep.
Okay. And so Walmart learns that, but their vendors become very different.
Yeah.
And so that something that, as you said, that I don't want to defend Walmart, they adapt.
Right.
And they do take care of their vendors, but it needs to be vendors that are supposed to be doing business with Walmart.
Right.
And that's not my market, so it's not one that I get involved in from a personal point of view. But as we move down the scale, if I meet a $2 million business and I say, "Who's your bank?" and they'll say Chase Manhattan, I say, "Don't do that. Go to a local bank.
Right.
Go to somebody that your business."
Right. Be important to the people you do business with.
Exactly. And so, So that's always the case.
Yeah.
If you're a $2 million business, don't want to become the client of a very large accounting firm. Go find a single practitioner accounting. That's your best place to do business.
Of course.
And so just things like that, that sometimes help. And then I've had a number of accounting clients that I've worked with to help get them. The other thing we haven't talked about, I will for one moment, if you'll allow me.
Yeah, if you got time, I got time.
Okay, is that most people don't understand the process of selling.
Right, right.
And when I began to understand this was I would begin to work with accountants. And some funny stories about it, but I won't go into them. But most accountants don't think of themselves as sellers.
Right. They're professionals. They don't sell.
Exactly.
Lawyers are the same way.
Yes, they are.
Right.
But I wasn't going to step on that one. So the point being is that if somebody doesn't understand, and many times in an owner-operated business, at least at the beginning cycles, the owner is the key seller.
Right.
And then he may be training other sellers as they begin to grow. And so that's what I discovered, a big opening when I was first starting this consulting practice, is having people understand the skill of sales,
right?
The skill of selling, and that never changes. Is just how do we sell the product or service we have? And the old style of selling is the seller is going to overcome the buyer and convince them to buy something that they don't want,
right?
And that doesn't work. That we're in a consultative time, and it just having people learn and understand the sales process is something that I never sold anything until I started doing this, and I quickly learned if I wasn't skilled to sell what I was trying to do, I wasn't going to be successful doing it.
Yeah.
So I learned the skill of selling, and then actually made it something that I would help others learn to do.
Yeah, I think people need to, in certain business. Look, certain businesses are strictly sales, right? You're in the investment business, financial services, insurance, whatever. But I think if people would embrace sales more as the driving force of their business and become a student of sales and learn how to do it the right way, and that sales is not tricking somebody into buying something and them never talking to you again. It's about getting people to make the decisions they need to be making and being comfortable about it. And, you know, it was funny. So I told you that I grew up in the life insurance business. My father's been in the business since 1965. That's an industry that has serious, serious sales training, right? Because it's a product that nobody wants. It's totally intangible. Even if you want it, sometimes you can't get it because you've got medical issues. And, you know, so the insurance companies have these sales meetings and sales training and, you know, to teach their people. And obviously the large national or international conferences, Million Dollar Roundtable and things like that, are, you know, they have some of the best sales meetings in the world. And I grew up around that stuff. So I saw all these different techniques, but a lot of businesses don't. And if they would embrace it. And I don't care, you know, I don't care if you go to Sandler Sales and get, you know, go through some training there, or you read it on your own, or, you know, they learn it as they're working with you. But I think that it's not a dirty word. And a lot of people are very uncomfortable. They think their friends are never going to talk to them again if they try and, quote unquote, sell them on something.
If you'd allow me, when I meet somebody that has that point of view.
Yeah.
I don't want to sell what I'm doing to my friends. They'll be unhappy with me.
Right.
Do you know what that person is communicating to me?
I'm sure a lot of things. Discomfort, insecurity.
No, there's one overriding. There's one overriding.
They need new friends? I don't know.
Well, no, let me use another metaphor. If I had a cure for cancer and I met somebody that had cancer, would I want to sell them my cure?
Right. Well, you wouldn't even think. Yeah, you'd want to save
of
their
course.
Life. Right.
Of course, I would.
Right.
Wait. Let me. And if I was unsuccessful selling them, I would then, I've got to get better at communicating that I have this because my friend will die because of my lack of skill.
Right.
So now let me extend that. If I don't want to sell my product to my friend, I don't believe in my product.
Right. That's it. You're correct. If you don't want to sell it to people that you know and love, how much could you believe in what you're selling?
I had an insurance agent a long time ago that was my client. And he would voice not wanting to be a persistent insurance seller to his friend. And I said to him, how dare you?
Right.
How dare you allow a friend? And this was a time when he had young children. His friends had young children. And I would say, how dare you allow your friend to not protect his family and his children?
Right.
Changed his life.
No, I'm sure. Because you could be the guy who shows up at the funeral or the wake or the Shiva with no way to help because you didn't ask your friend about whatever insurance that they needed or investing money or whatever it happens to be.
I'd like to say I created that, but I learned that from an experienced insurance seller who said exactly that to me. He said the first time that he came to a funeral or a wake or a Shiva and presented a widow with a large check.
Right.
He said it changed his life.
Of course.
He never thought the same about what he did again.
I know a bunch of guys that went through that, and that's the story that they tell. And
so sometimes it's putting people in touch with those things.
Right.
That's so important.
With an understanding of what they do. Yeah. Yep. Everything's consciousness and perspective. That's the word I'm thinking of. Everything's perspective, you know, because if you really realize that what you're doing is so important that if your friend doesn't do it, it's going to have a detrimental effect on his life. You wouldn't look at it like you're trying to sell him something. You'd look at it like you're trying to help him, which is what you should be looking at it as.
Exactly. Now, we've been at this for pretty much close to an hour.
Yeah. Coming up on there.
And we've covered both operationally and what's the other word I would add, psychologically, but non-operationally, different elements of my consulting practice.
Right.
Okay. So might you have other questions that we haven't yet uncovered?
I don't think so. I think if people want to learn more about you, we'll put your links in the show notes.
If you like our podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at beinlaw33@gmail.com. That's beinlaw33@gmail.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur has been written, directed, and produced by Mitchell Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about Mitchell and his practice, you can find him on social media or visit his website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.